That was James Ingram and Michael McDonald with Yamo Be There. Before that, we had James Ingram with his version of I Believe I Can Fly, and we started that off with Try Your Love Again. And that was all in honor of the late James Ingram that we lost earlier this week at the age of 66. Up on the show today, I have a very special, well, tonight, I guess, I have a very special guest, someone who goes way back to our days at WRFL, a very good friend of mine, someone who, he's a brother of mine. I'd like to introduce y'all to the grandson of rhythm and blues, Mr. Lucky Otis. Lucky, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's going down? Here I am. Here you are.
Yeah, it's really good to have you on the show. I know that we had tried to do this back and forth a lot, and it just never materialized. So I'm glad that we, you know, after all these years, we're finally able to do it here.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's been a minute, but I know you're busy out there, and I'm swamped. You know what I mean? Doing the swamp thing over here. It's actually storming right now here in LA. It's you might hear some thunder. You might feel some thunder on the call here. So,
well, as long as we don't get shocked, it'll be all right. Now you told me that you had kind of a relationship with James Ingram, right?
Well, the relationship, quote unquote, all that means is a story, because it doesn't have to do directly with me, but it does have to do with someone very close to me. And in fact, I'll just say that James Ingram, he came out from Ohio, right? In 73. You know about this? Do you know about his trip out here and how he pretty much, he came from Ohio to LA and settled, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that was about 73, if I'm not mistaken. And he was in a trio with Gary Dapp Gibson, one of my good friends out here, who was actually the drummer for Dolomite, Rudy Ray Moore, for years. Gary Dapp, he's still active. He plays out here. He came out with James, and they came out with a third member. And I'll remember his name in a minute. But when they came out here, you know, they wanted to make it big, basically. And when they showed up, you know, no one really knew who they were, but there was someone who gave them a shot. And what happened was they did this, recording session with this cat, who hired them. And this cat had, basically written a musical, and the musical was about a boxer who sold his soul for fame and victories and stuff like that. And it was a two-person play, like one-act musical play. And James Ingram was hired to play the piano, and Gary was hired to play the drums. And that guy who hired him was Johnny Otis.
Who is your grandfather.
Yes. And it's crazy when who told me was Gary. See, Grandpa did a lot of stuff that you might not know he did. You know what I mean? Like he
ran for governor.
He was the assistant to the lieutenant governor. He ran for assemblyman.
Oh, okay.
But he was assistant to Mervyn Dimerly, who was the first black lieutenant governor in California's history, working with Jerry Brown and whatnot in the '70s. I used to go with him to the office in Hawthorne. And it was a trip, you know. It's like, my grandpa's a politician. My grandfather's brother, who's still alive, Nicholas, you're actually near him. He's in McLean, Virginia, which is 10 minutes outside of D.C. Long story short, he majored in political science out of Cal Berkeley in 1948. Okay? So he's been a politician since then. And he was the United States ambassador to Egypt during Anwar Sadat's presidency. They were really good friends. And he was also the ambassador to Jordan during King Hussein the First reign. And they were really good friends. And so, yeah, it's a trip how my grandfather was a dropout from Berkeley High School, ended up, you know, being successful in his own way. His brother, you know, with all the honors and accolades of you know, accredited university, they both did well. So that just goes to show, as long as you stick with what you know, anything's possible.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And so, I mean, just from, you know, going from your grandfather and your dad, you know, being Shuggie Otis, like, you must have been surrounded by music pretty much your entire life, right?
Yeah. just engulfed, because it was already going on. It's not like there's just instruments sitting around and, you know, they're just sitting around. I mean, these things are being used on historical recordings. When I was growing up, was around the time, you know, this was after Inspiration Information, you know, Shuggie's third album. And yeah, I was always around it. You know, my grandfather had the instruments in the studio. So I gravitated toward the drums first. But before that, I had this Mickey Mouse plastic electric guitar that I used to run around the house and smack things with. My mom told me, she said, you used to hit everything with it. And I was like, well, maybe, you know, I'm just a drummer, you know, at heart. But, oh, you turn around and strum the strings. Okay, I got you. So it's just a matter of how to manipulate and to understand how to get the sound out of it. But, you know, you have people today who smack the guitar and make a living out of it, you know?
Well, you know, it's... No, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead. I can keep going.
I was just going to say, you know, one thing that I tell a lot of people, you know, when folks talk about like being multi-instrumentalists, is, I don't know if you remember saying this to me or not, but I remember we played a show in Palo Alto, California together. And
of course, the World Music Festival.
Yeah, the World Music Festival. And I remember I asked you, I said, what do you play? And you said everything. And I was like, what do you mean?
Well, you know, I think I just watched the Prince American Bandstand. You ever seen that, when he comes out and,
yeah,
and Dick Clark asks him, well, how many instruments do you play? And he went 27, you know? So it's like, you know, it's that whole thing. Like, if you play more than one instrument, you know, it's, yeah, I play this and that. So sometimes you can sit there, because people would always ask me, what do you play, man? What do you play? Oh, I play this and I play that. And I start reaching into my mind about it. So after a while, I just went like, oh, I play whatever I get my hands on. And that's pretty much the answer I give now. you know, I actually do play different things, drums, bass, upright bass, guitar, you know, keys, not, you know, the organ with the pedals and everything. We had a B3 at the house. You know, my grandfather had a church in the house, you know, when we were growing up. He converted the bottom floor of the house to a church, and Jimmy Smith would come, and Little Richard, and the Clara Ward singers, and all these people would. And so, you know, there were always instruments all over the place. And I just didn't separate them. When I got my first job, you know, with Johnny Otis Show, it was on the bass, because in my mind I said, now if my grandpa plays the piano and the vibraphones, all right, and my father plays the guitar and my uncle plays the drums, what does that leave me? I said, well, and everyone kept telling me how the bass was the center of everything, you know, the glue, you know, of, you know, it holds everything together, because it has this rhythmic thing that's solid with the drums, but it also has the notes along with all the, you know, so the other instruments. And so I gravitated toward that. And much like Bootsy Collins and James Brown, where he was standing in the middle and just in the back playing. That's, you know, if you see, check out, you know, a lot of the Johnny Otis Show stuff from when I got in the band, you know, around the turn of the millennium, that I'm standing right in the back there, you know, and it felt really good to be back there. You know, I felt really comfortable. I never had to go up to the front necessarily. And then one time my grandpa, you know, during hand jive, there was always a break where he says, we're going to give the drummer some. So, you know, boom, 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 and you hear the drums. And, okay, now we're going to give the bass some. And I used to stand back there. I didn't want to move. I would just, you know, play whatever, slap whatever. You know, get your little claps, and then you move on with the song. And I think it was my 21st birthday. And my grandfather, he had a club called the Johnny Otis Cabaret. I know you heard about it. It was in Northern California when they moved up there to the ranch. So long story short, I was so hyped because it was my birthday and it was on a Saturday night. Come on, let's do the bass. Now, I had this girlfriend that worked with us, you know, she worked at the, she was young, you know, and she was one of the waitresses, and she was on a break, and she was standing off the side of the stage. I can't believe I'm remembering this. This is funny. And so you ever had that point, Devon, where you just said, oh, you know, I just graduated tonight. Like, I did something that I've never done before. You know what I mean? That was what it was. I stepped off the stage and was walking toward her with the bass. And it was a trip because I'd never done anything like that before. And all of a sudden, this crazy woman, I don't know where she came from, right in between us and started, like, basically freaking on me to the point where I couldn't, like, she was muffling the strings. That's all you heard was and she, it was crazy. And that really made my girlfriend jealous. But the power of music is very intense. I didn't even know what to expect, you know, out of that situation. So really what I'm getting at is you start to, you know, get this feeling of from the back to the front. And then as my grandfather retired and, you know, before he passed, he said, you know, Shuggy's doing his own thing, you know, and your Uncle Nick pretty much follows him to the ends of the earth. So I know you love what I started, you know, you always ask me about the history and, you know, so, you know, go ahead and carry this legacy on, basically. And he told me that. And so it instantly brought me to the front, you know, it was just like this thing where, and so I remembered how. And he was self-taught on the vibraphones. So I would watch him. And long story short, I ended up, you know, leading the Johnny Otis show after he passed. And we did some really, you know, historical special shows, you know, in honor of his life and his career. One of them was at the Musicians Union Hall in Local 47 in Los Angeles. And it was very special. And so I was playing piano and vibes, and I jumped up on the guitar. And I actually had Richard Berry III on bass.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, his grandfather, Richard Berry, wrote Louie Louie. He was in the Pharaohs, Have Love, Will Travel, all that. So, and he was just, he was a greenhorn. I mean, he was like 19 or 20 standing up there with us. And he made the paper. We made the paper in the LA Times. And I woke up the next morning. I said, hey, go get the paper. You know how you do? You put a quarter in and grab all the papers. I said, go grab all the papers. You're in it. A big picture with you and I. And, you can still probably, you know, search it on the internet. It's there in the LA Times. And it was a very special time. That was one concert. Then we did the Yoshi's in Oakland and sold it out. And I was playing piano and vibes. And, you know, when I was in the group, I would never get, like, applause for walking up and plugging the bass in. But as soon as I stepped up there with that jacket, I was wearing one of my grandpa's show jackets. As soon as I stepped up there, people were clapping. I said, whoa. So it gave me a new confidence that, you know, feeling appreciated and loved and anticipating what I was going to do. Boom, jumped right into some, you know, C blues. And that was that. Jumped up on the vibes, the piano, the guitar. And we sold that night out at Yoshi's. The same night, Yoshi San Francisco sold out the Stone City Band. And that, I thought that was interesting because it's cool, you know, to think like, oh, not everyone's at that one, not everyone's at this one. Like, there's enough people to go around. And then I just hung out with Stone City drummer at NAMM show. You know, I got to meet a lot of people at NAMM show. I'd never been this year, and I just went for my first time. And it's just crazy. I'm sitting in the hotel room, and I said, what? I said, wait, I don't recognize him with no glitter and beaded braids and crazy shiny clothes, but that's him. Gotta do gal, gotta do gal. That's him.
That's crazy. You know? That's crazy. Well, let's get into some of your music. Because, you know, sure. I know what you sound like, but I don't think our listeners know really quite the just, you know, the kind of stuff that you've got going on. So we have three songs coming up. One is called Number 9 Train, and then there's a collaboration between you and Leadbelly's grandson.
Yeah, great grandson, Lewis Leadbetter. I pulled him out of retirement.
Okay.
And Yeah, we did something for Jam in the Van, which is kind of like this show. Yeah,
Okay.
it's on the internet. You could totally look it up. Otis Ledbetter.
And then
you'll see us.
And then there's a cover of you doing "The Wind Cries Mary," right?
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was on tour. I was on a 6-month tour. I left home and went to Northern California and basically just, you know, ran it up there. I loved it. It was so great. You know, everyone was having such a great time. And that was at the live at the Sequoia Room at the North Coast Brewery in Fort Bragg, California. That was very recent.
All right. So we're going to have three tracks from Lucky Otis. We'll have the Otis Ledbetter collaboration with Hard to Swallow, Lucky Otis with a cover, an acoustic cover of Wind Cries Mary. And here is Lucky Otis with Number 9 Train. And this is the Crunkadelic Funk Show, 91.3 WUKY. Wow. Lucky Otis with a live version of his, of a cover of The Wind Cries Mary. And that was on you said you were playing a double neck on that one?
Yeah, it's actually up on the video and the internet. You could check it. I think the guy who did the video labeled it kind of funny. It's not like it says Lucky Otis, Wind Cries Mary, but it might say Sequoia Room or something on the link. But you can see that I'm playing a double neck. It's the Dan Electro Type 3.
Wow.
Made in Indonesia. I love it. I actually traded my we're going to get technical for a minute. I traded my Black Beauty replica, my Epiphone, for it.
Wow.
To acquire it. And I actually threw the Epiphone Blues Deluxe amp in with it. I said, here, take this heavy thing, because it really goes with the guitar, you know?
Yeah, I feel that.
So I love the fact, I mean, that thing, yeah, it's my favorite thing in the world.
Well, you know, well, since I haven't seen you in a minute, but since the last time mm-hmm. we saw each other, I acquired a Epiphone Black Les Paul that looks very similar to the one Eddie's got on that cover of Game Dames, a guitar thing. So I know how well that guitar feels. So know, must have been a good thing to trade.
But hey, it's got a nice tone. It's got a nice, that Black Beauty is ridiculous. You know, every single part of the neck, you know, you can stretch it.
Well, now you were playing guitar on most of that stuff. What are you kind of doing now? I mean, are you mainly doing guitar stuff, or is it or when you're filling in with folks, are you playing bass, or what are you doing now?
it's kind of like, if you're a fireman, are you driving the truck? Are you operating the hose? Are you getting people out of the building? I mean, or all three? If you do all three, you're going to get an award. So I feel like I'm doing a lot of all three, if you know what I mean. I bring my harmonicas everywhere. You know, I play harmonica on those. See, that was a solo tour called the Tour de Chance, like Tour de France.
Yeah.
It was like whatever happens. But I booked some things. I got together with an agent who was, trust me, when this story comes out, I'll do my best not to ragtag this person, but they really did a number, if you know what I mean. They actually tried to extort me and blackmail me for all of the documentary files on their iCloud. But we'll talk about that some other time. So on this tour, 200 events in 150 days straight. I didn't take one day off.
Wow.
Starting from June 1st, I had a gig down here in Long Beach with my group, The Mob, which is I call it hard lounge. Cause like really it's punk. It's like punk jazz. Like Jocko called it punk jazz, but these guys were actually punk legends in groups. One of the guys, Joe Biza, was in a group called Saccharin Trust in the 80s, who was a label mate of Black Flag on SST Records. They would do shows together. And this other guy in the group, Vince Maroney, was in a group called El Grupo Sexo, which was huge in Los Angeles. And they would do a lot of shows with Fishbone. They were kind of like a ska punk deal. So, you know, years later, you know, I'm the kid in the group, and here we are doing this thing, The Mob. And it was because I called it that because of our last names, M.O.B., Maroney, Otis, Biza. And then I just went with the whole mob theme, you know. I started grabbing Luciano pictures off the internet and just sepia toned everything. I said, you know, I got my own style here. And since then, the mob has dispersed in what, I mean, we had a great drummer. We had a great vibes player, you know. He actually had a digi vibe too, so he can make sounds like keyboards and sound effects, and people loved it. But going off on that, long story short is I am now the one man mob, and I'm recreating this vibe. So after the mob show, I went up north, boom, and I'm on tour from June till December, and I came back down. I actually came to LA one time in September to do a quick one, went right back up. So I mean, I'm talking, yeah. So I had the guitar with me, and I had the vocals with me and the harmonica.
Okay.
And that's what I was doing. That's what I was doing the whole tour. So yeah, you know, it's easy that way. Yeah.
And you stay pretty busy, kind of as doing a sideman thing. Because you were telling me the other day you're playing with Frankie Cash Waddy from Bootsy's band.
Well, we can call it sideman, but mm-hmm. Here's the thing about it. I like to look at it as being a featured artist, because that's actually what I am. Like Sly Stone said, everybody is a star, and Uncle Frankie, he likes to bring out the star quality in everyone. He's such a loving dude. Like, he's the kind of dude. I mean, trust me. Have you met this cat? I know you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've met him before. I mean, Funkadelic just played. Well, P-Funk played here in like 2012, and Frankie was playing drums for them.
Sweet. Yeah, So I did a funk house thing with him in San Diego with all my buddies and everybody, and it was ridiculous. Star Colors, the only female that plays in the group. She, I know you've seen her. Mm-hmm. She always does Red Hot Mama, you know.
Yeah,
she's amazing. So she was there. Tate Sims, awesome guitar player who used to play with Christina Aguilera. Just an all-star cast. And so Frankie brings us out in this family vibe, you know, and it's great. We do all the old stuff, and we even did another brick in the wall, because you know how politically right now, you know, the wall and all this, and people were screaming, leave them kids. I mean, it's just everything that we did was hot that night, and that was last week.
Wow.
And then NAMM showed up, you know, when we did I went to the NAMM, and at the House of Blues in Anaheim, we did Trulio Disgracious with my homie Norwood from Fishbone. And Frankie played drums on that too. Actually, Stephen Perkins was in the house from Jane's Addiction. Bill Summers was on percussion from the Headhunters. Need I go on? There was, yeah. Oh my God, it was incredible. It was incredible. And that was Thursday. You know, did I mention Wednesday when I met Doug Wimbish from Living Color? So
you just seem to be like all over the place all the time, but in really great spaces musically.
Man, well, come on. That's how we got to do it. You know, if I sit around for a minute, I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel like I'm missing something. And I wish I could, you know, Michael Keaton myself or something, you know, Multiplicity and clone and just be everywhere. But I think I do a pretty good job at, you know, organizing all this stuff within a 25-hour day.
I feel that for sure. Well, let's get back into some music to wrap things up here. You came up with a very good what I think is a very great cluster of songs. You've got we'll have your grandfather with a super funky tune that I had never heard until just now, called Coming At You, Baby. A song from the Sugi Otis Wings of Love album, which was the double feature of the re-release of Inspiration Information. And then a song with Sugi and Frank Zappa. Now, there was an interesting thing that came out of the relationship between Sugi and Frank Zappa, and that was you, correct?
Well, yeah. If you look at it historically, around before my time, 1969, my father was, you know, about 15 years old, and he was called by Zappa. You know, Zappa was a huge Johnny Otis fan. If you look back, Frank idolized my grandfather. They asked him in an interview one point, I don't know if you ever read it. He said, well, what's with the goatee? You know, why don't you ever, you know, shave it? He said, well, he said, if it worked for Johnny Otis, you know, I'm hoping it'll work for me too, or something like that.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he gave him praise. In fact, Grandpa started the first Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame. You know, he felt like, you know, all the cats needed some recognition. You know, so I have the card in my wallet to this day that my grandpa gave me. It's a member card. Wow. And you know, member since, and the Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame. And he started with Joe Liggins, the Honey Dripper, Big J McNeely, who else? Roy Milton. Let me see. Grandpa was the president. Roy Milton was the vice president. I think Big J McNeely was the secretary. And Joe Liggins, the Honey Dripper, was the treasurer because he was good with money.
Okay, all right. Okay, like that. Put the person that's good with money in now, that situation.
Frank, so Frank, Jerry Wexler from Atlantic Records, and Ahmet Erdogan were the were kind of like the here, come on in. You know, they were my grandpa's friends. You know what I mean? And so he brought them in on this thing, and it was kind of like this thing that really, really, really never. You know, boom, hit worldwide, but it was the first of its kind to recognize everyone. And in fact, when after my grandfather passed at those two gigs that we did right after, I mentioned all the names, you know, of everyone that grandpa was, I mean, it was long winded. I think I was up there for like 3 minutes before we played the first song, but people were like, oh yeah. Because they would hear names, you know,
mm-hmm.
like people they recognize, you know, Etta James, Little Lester, Johnny Guitar Watson, Canned Heat. People don't know he produced, was it their first demo or something? Anyways, it's crazy how he was part of everything. So Zappa calls Grandpa, says, hey, I'd like you to bring Shuggie over. And I think he's the only one that could play this bass line. You know, I've got it all written out. Just come on. I live up in Laurel Canyon. So they go up there, and he drives them up there, and he drops them off. He says, okay, I'll come back and pick you up. Hey, Frank, how you doing? And Frank says, hey, Johnny, no, come on in and see my studio. You know, come on in. You know, did you know this is Harry Houdini's old house? Did you know that? You know, the magician, blah, blah. And so he said, okay. So Grandpa got out. This is coming from Grandpa. And he walked in. He said, yeah, wow, cool, you know. He says, yeah, here, sit down on my piano. Play it. You know, play something. And he said, play something in B minor. And my grandpa said, B minor? He said, that's like one of the hardest keys to play, you know, because it's just, you know, crazy key to play in. It's not like C major with all the white keys, you know, or E flat with all the black keys. It's like a mix. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, what? And then all of a sudden, Frank goes into the other room. Shuggie's already plugged in on the bass. See, Frank was a slickster. He went in the other room and did his finger like that, and they started recording.
Wow.
And I think it was Ron Serico on drums. And if you ever listen to Peaches and Regalia, it blew my mind to see the personnel was only four people with a bunch of overdubs.
Wow.
It really sounds like 20 people. Yeah, right? Ron Serico on drums, Shuggie on bass. Ian Underwood on like 10 different instruments and Frank Zappa on 10 different instruments and Johnny Otis on the piano in B minor somewhere. And if you ask Dweezil, he has, you know, Frank's son, he has the tape somewhere, you know, he doesn't return my calls. I called him out on a duel and he never answered. So what does that tell you? I did that a long time ago.
Yeah, well,
you know, anything for publicity, right? Huh?
Well, but and then your mom had a relationship with Frank Zappa being in the GTOs, right?
Correct. Miss Mercy was in the all girl group, the GTOs, around the same time, 1969, and she was the one who named the album Permanent Damage. In fact, she's doing a book, and she's going to call the book that about her memoirs. And if she lies about me, and I'm going to come out with a book and correct every single lie. So anyway. So really what it comes down to is they met through, I believe it was Mike Kowalski, who was one of the drummers on the Cold Shot album or one of Shuggie's albums.
Okay.
I think he might have played drums on Me and My Woman.
Okay. So anyway,
Long story short, they met, you know, but yeah, it's a trip how everything was kind of like full circle. And I wasn't there, obviously, but I was.
Yeah, right.
I can't really tell you everything like that. All I know is a few years later, I came about. And then, know, I don't know. It's just, it's such a trip. You know, I'm actually doing my own memoirs and documentary style story to make sense of my own life and my own history. And I'm right in the middle of this thing, encrypting the entire,
Well, lucky man, it has been an absolute blast to hang out with you. But like, it really feels like old times because you used to call in to when I had the show on WRFL. We would just sit back and, you know, there was a lot more time. We got to spend a lot more time, lot more music to play. Actually, there was one time I remember you were on the phone and there was like a fire and I had to run out of the station and I was like, man, I got to go.
And I forget if you had Ohio players queued up or not. But
it was the Isley Brothers. It was the Isley Brothers version of Spill the Wine, because you had said, oh, look this up and play it. And I had queued it up, and then they were like, yeah, you have to leave.
That's right. But a lot of people to this day haven't heard the Isley Brothers version of Spill the Wine. I think it's on an album called Brother Brother or something. They're holding acoustic guitars.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's really a great version.
But anyways, man, you know, thank you so much for calling into the show tonight. And, you know, let's do this again soon. And, you know, we'll bring some more music with us next time.
Oh, you're family, man. One love. And when you come out to California next time, it doesn't matter if you're hours away, man. Just, you know, let me know, because really what it is. And I don't see how come you ain't booking me on a Kentucky World Tour. What's going on out there?
Let's make it happen.
Exactly.
All right.
Yes,
well,
we're going to do some music.
Yes. This has been Lucky Otis here on the Crunkadelic Funk Show on 91.3 WUKY. Here is Johnny Otis with Coming At You, Baby.